Welcome to our paranormal afterlife. This is episode 175 of Paranormal Stories. This episode I'm reading from Dr. Anona Blackwell's book, From Medic to Mystic, the true story of an academic physician's journey into the paranormal. When I have guests on my podcasts, I read their books to work out questions for the episodes. When reading these books, I always find such amazing information that never makes it into the podcast, and here I get a chance to give you a peek into the book. I've put a link to the book in the show notes, and I did seek permission to record this extract, and the author kindly said yes. I'm going to start with a section titled, A Three-Way Conversation with Spirit, and this is what Dr. Blackwell has written. Sometimes, as with the Cockney lady I saw at St. Thomas's Hospital, the people I met were very aware of the presence of their late relatives. On one occasion, while working in a clinic in Swansea, I even had a three-way conversation, speaking verbally with my patient and telepathically with her late husband, while the patient was also communicating telepathically with him. Edith was a delightful widow in her late 70s, who presented with a simple skin condition. As she tottered into my room, I felt a strong male presence behind her. I was seated at my desk, facing Edith, and standing in the doorway was a man wearing a long grey Macintosh with a trilby hat. Though his arms were folded and his gaze was gently focused on Edith, I sensed that this man would not be happy if I said anything that might upset his wife. After telepathically reassuring him, I asked Edith some routine questions about her gynecological history and current problem. She told me that her marriage had been consensually platonic and that her late husband had been wheelchair-bound since before they met, so she could not have an infection. Edith added that many years previously she'd had a hysterectomy for fibroids. "When was that?" I inquired. "Oh dear, I can't remember. I'll just ask my husband. He's standing right there," she said, pointing to the door. Inwardly pleased that Edith had confirmed what I was seeing, I was nonetheless aware of this fine line between sensing spirit energy and overt psychosis, and thus had to be careful in my response. "Yes, I see him too," I reassured Edith. "But given he was in a wheelchair all his adult life, why is he standing and looking so well?" "Because as soon as he died, he was healthy again," Edith explained, matter-of-factly. What a lovely oxymoronic concept, I thought, as I ruminated on my past experience and realised that all the dead folk I had encountered had appeared to be perfectly fit with no apparent trace of disease. And all had been fully clothed, just as they had been in life. "Do you think she is psychotic?" my nurse inquired, after Edith and her departed husband had left together, tacitly confirming my suspicion that Edith had been openly chatting about her late husband's presence with other staff members before our appointment. "I do hope not, because I saw him too," I responded. He was wearing a long raincoat and a trilby hat. Given the shocked expression on my nurse's face, I couldn't help thinking that it was just as well that Edith had seen me rather than one of my colleagues. She may well have faced an unpleasant and unnecessary psychiatric intervention. As a footnote to Edith's husband's healthy appearance, my friend, Dr. Penny Sartori, whom I first met when she attended one of my lectures as a student nurse, is now an internationally recognised researcher in near-death studies. An ICU nurse for 17 years, Penny has cared for many patients close to death. As a result of her experiences, she began researching near-death experiences, which culminated in a PhD and the publication of her monograph, The Near-Death Experiences of Hospitalised Intensive Care Patients, a 5-year clinical study, published in 2008, as well as 3 successful books on this subject. Penny Sartori tells of one patient with a lifelong fixed deformity of his hand who, following an NDE, became partially healed. Did he die and, like Edith's husband, receive a perfect energy template again, which manifested as a cure when he was revived? Of course, that is something that we may never know. So now I'm going to read from Chapter 2, which is titled A Baptism of Bombs and Fire, My Time at St. Stephen's. Our working week at St. Stephen's was 120 hours of constant, on-your-feet graft, often running long distances between the old and new wings, with overtime paid at 15 pence per hour after our 80 hours basic pay, which amounted to £2,859 per year. And if we worked any less than 120 hours, my adored boss, Mr. David Aloysius McFarlane, would question why we had taken time off. Over one bank holiday weekend, I clocked 56 hours non-stop, during which there were 5 changes of nursing staff. It was dangerously mind and body crippling, and all of us survived. At least one of my peers was forced to leave after developing severe colitis. After one such marathon shift, I could barely stand. On returning to my room, I collapsed onto my bed, my body desperately yearning for rest. A few moments later, I saw my father enter the room. Then I heard the words, "Phone your mum." He then disappeared into the wall. I was too exhausted to be curious about this apparent hallucination and just responded, "Dad, I'm so tired. Our mum will be out in the field planting cabbages." Which she was indeed doing, as I discovered when the phone in my room rang just a few moments later. Wearily, I lifted the receiver. I heard a disembodied voice instructing me to dial O for an outside call. We loved these calls since they usually signified that someone outside our hospital prison was contacting us. Only this time, the person reaching out to me was Robin, a friend of my dad's. He was calling to give me some news that was to change my entire life. My father had just died. The sequence of events was revealed to me later. Mum, Dad and Robin, a radiographer at our local hospital, had been busy planting cabbages when Mum decided it was time to make tea for everyone. She went indoors, put the kettle on, and let our German shepherd dog Lulu out. Lulu headed straight for the newly planted cabbages and immediately started running amok. Dad turned, yelled at Mum, and then promptly dropped dead from a massive heart attack. Robin tried to revive him, but Dad was gone. His last duty on this side of the Vale was to get his beloved wife some help. He found a way to contact me. Years before, Dad had made me promise to take care of Mum when he died. It was not a role I particularly relished, as Mum was not the easiest of people to care for, but I considered it a sacred contract. And now I'm moving on to the next section. One of my colleagues was leaving, and since it was my night off, I joined a doctor's mess party. At home, we were teetotal, and whilst a medical student, I was too poor to drink much. Indeed, the only time I had gone to the student's bar was on the day we received our results, and the bar lady had initially refused to serve me because she didn't recognise me. I told her I'd been there for 5 years. Because a close friend was leaving, I allowed myself to indulge in 2 large glasses of rather grim red wine. Next morning, nursing a bad hangover and feeling decidedly sick, I plodded listlessly behind my colleagues, making the early ward rounds. I must have looked pretty rough, because a friendly ward sister took pity on me and asked a senior house officer to prescribe something to ease my nausea. An hour or so later, I was in the operating theatre, waiting to assist my boss, Mr. McFarlane, with a fairly minor procedure, when I suddenly became unable to hold my head straight. I was having an adverse reaction to the medicine I'd been given. Within seconds, I began to lose consciousness. Another junior doctor was hastily summoned to assist the boss as I was carried off to the post-op room. Suddenly, I was floating in another realm where everything seemed rather vague and cloudy. I could not see anyone, but I was aware of a divine, loving presence communicating with me. I don't recall any words being exchanged, but somehow I knew that if I wanted to die now, I could. And if I decided to return, I would face a hard life. I had no idea where I was, but I had no desire to leave this place. I felt so happy and comforted as I was floating on warm pink candy floss. Then I was shown the effect my death would have on my mother, and everything changed. I could not bear to hurt my mum when she had suffered so much after my dad's death, so, reluctantly, I asked to be sent back, and instantly I was. The next thing I was aware of was the last drops of an intravenous dose of diazepam being slowly injected into a vein in my arm. Today I was reading from Dr. Anona Blackwell's book, From Medic to Mystic, The True Story of an Academic Physician's Journey into the Paranormal. If you want to buy the book, there is info and a link in the show notes. And my book on verified near-death experiences is now on Amazon and other great bookshops. A great way to support the podcast is to sign up on Patreon. Just go to patreon.com/ourparanormalafterlife or click on the button on my homepage, pastliveshypnosis.co.uk. And if you enjoy the podcast, please leave a review and be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or via your favourite podcast app to make sure that you don't miss out on any episodes. And thanks for listening.